This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Now, Tim said about this show that he feels the most unlikely candidate for a career retrospective, considering he's still semi-alive, apparently. Well, we wholeheartedly disagree. We don't think he's dead, but we think he's actually very alive. And we're very, very proud and excited to be presenting Tim Burton exhibition exclusively here in Australia. And by the way, just to show you how far-sighted Melburnians are, the city's founding fathers seem to have had a little inkling of this and started planning for it over 175 years ago. Some of you may know that Melbourne in 1835 was briefly to be named Batmania, which I just think is the most fantastic name. It was, of course, after John Batman, one of the founders. The other alternatives he had, by the way, were Guelphia, Bear Brass, or Bear Burp. But we decided that Lord Melbourne, the British Prime Minister, was better naming. So here we are with Batmania coming back, though. Now, Melburnians also do like a bit of history, but prefer it with a modern twist. So today I can reveal exclusively, on behalf of the Minister and Government, that for the next 3 months, while the Melbourne Winter Masterpiece is on, the city is officially to be known as Melburton, as is entirely fitting. Now, it's become known that Tim carries with him nearly everywhere he goes a pocket sketchbook and a small watercolour kit to satisfy an insatiable desire he has and a habit of capturing the world and characters around him. Tim, I hope you'll find some time and inspiration to do a little of that here in Melbourne, and, of course, picking up some thoughts for characters or locations for that Tim Burton Down Under film, which I'm sure is already hatching up there. Tim captures the world and gives it twists that, as beautiful and wondrous as they are, strange and humorous. The fresh insights he achieves permeate all his much-loved feature films, and, of course, these started with cult status and then quickly broke out into the huge worldwide audiences you see, including for the Alice film. The artworks featured in the exhibition really do provide an incredibly rich window into how observation and drawing is the kernel from which his characters and worlds emerge and form. Now, Tim has been very generous and enthusiastic in his commitment to realising this exhibition, both in its original form at MoMA and its revised and slightly expanding presentation at Acme. He was right in the middle of post-production, the launch period for Alice, which was simply huge worldwide. Tim spent time for us creating the brand new installations produced here in Melbourne for the gallery and others that invade the physical building and exterior you have no doubt seen. Now, presenting exhibitions of this scale wouldn't be possible without the generous support of many partners and collaborators, as well as the creative and other committed staff here at Acme that worked tirelessly to deliver the vision. I'd particularly like to thank the Victorian Government, to Brendan McClements and the team at the Victorian Major Events Company, our colleagues at Arts Victoria and Tourism Victoria, for working with us to present this winter masterpiece. And I'd also particularly like to acknowledge the team at MoMA. It was their original conception and hard work and brilliance, and particularly to director Glenn Lowry, who has travelled here to Australia to be here for the launch, Raj Roy, MoMA's chief curator film, and his magnificent curatorial team have been working with us on the show here as well. Their commitment to working with us and bringing the exhibition is hugely appreciated. Now, without further ado, I'd like to welcome the man himself, Tim Burton, to join me and we'll speak a few words. Please make him welcome.
I just want to say thank you to everybody here because, like they said, most of this stuff was never meant to really be seen. And I felt in very good hands. They've done an amazing job. I also like the lighting. It's much darker than it was at MoMA, which makes me feel a little bit more comfortable. But again, everybody, I want to thank you for making me feel so welcome.
It's a pleasure, Tim. Now, we're just going to exchange a few thoughts and some of the questions I know people have been asking that we've got to get at you. It's your second time in Melbourne. I know you haven't been able to look around since your last visit a few years ago, but we will be showing you some of why Melbourne is seen as Australia's creative and cultural capital. But we'll also make sure you find some of the great suburbs too. Not as good as Burbank, but they're pretty close, I assure you. Now, the exhibition in New York, it got quite an extraordinary response, as we've heard, and it got MoMA's third highest attendance ever. How does it feel now that the Holy Trinity of modern art is Picasso, Matisse, and Burton.
I mean, the thing that I feel comfortable about, I mean, for me, what was made me feel comfortable is that it wasn't presenting me as like either a great artist or filmmaker. It's just something as a process, and I felt very, very comfortable in what they told me about New York was that people that wouldn't ordinarily go to a museum came to the show, which that made me feel very, very, you know, great. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, because I didn't grow up in a museum culture. You know, I went to the Hollywood Wax Museum. It's probably the only mm-hmm. museum I really went to. So you can't really call that a museum. But that's what I love about this place, too. When you showed me around yesterday, the sort of interactive nature of things, it's just is much more inviting and exciting, and that's why I'm very happy to, you know, be here. You really, you know, present things in a way that just makes it more, you know, it's not so standoffish as the sort of museum experience. It's sort of much more draws you in, which I really, really appreciate.
Thanks, Tim. You were surprised when they were approached by Ron and the MoMA team about doing a curator retrospective, weren't you? Were you very reluctant, or did it grab you straight away?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize I saved so much stuff, because I never really look at it. I sort of stuff in drawers, and Ron and Jenny just kind of did an archaeological dig, and, you know, they found my original rejection slips from Disney and all sorts of things, which I didn't even know I had or kept, you know, I learned a lot about myself that I wouldn't have ordinarily, because I would have never ever looked at it again. So, you know, they really did a lot of work and digging around to find a lot of this stuff.
As good fun as making a film?
Yeah, it's strange. You know, it's like having your dirty laundry hanging on the walls a bit in some ways. But like I said, with all of you and the way you presented it and stuff, I feel really, really comfortable. In good hands.
That's great. And you like the way the exhibition is presented here? We're particularly pleased with the creatures and so on you've taken out on the streets of Melbourne.
Yeah, you know, it's like great. That. It's really, really beautiful. And it's, you know, it's a different space than MoMA in New York, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, it's a bigger space here, but it still feels intimate. It still, you know, has the chaos of my mind in a way. It's great because it's the same, some of the same material, but different, and it for me, it really, seeing this for the first time, really fits this space really, really nicely, and it's, you know, it's got a good finish, it's got a good flow to it, very nice.
Well, I've got to say, our space has never looked better than what with your works gracing it. Really, now, look, the shows are really quite personal and very generous insight into filmmaking. You say it's about your dirty laundry, and I mean, it really is sort of an entire career going back to your youngest period, and it goes right into your imagination. You use a wide range of media and inspirations, obviously, but you've said that drawing is your thought process. What is it about drawing that makes it such an important form for you?
Well, early on in my life, I didn't really speak. So I, you know, as an animator at Disney, I didn't speak very much. And so I always used drawing as a way to communicate, you know, and also explore my own, you know, I felt much more comfortable doing a sketch and having that have more meaning to me than sort of my intellectual mind, and so it's always been, in certain projects, you know, a way of like thinking that, well, that's more meaningful and powerful for me coming from an image, and you know, rather than writing a lot, sometimes if I go someplace or whatever, a little sketch or doodle or drawing for me, you know, is my, you know, kind of like my journal.
It sort of gets your brain straight onto the
page. Out more from the subconscious, and I feel much more sort of comfortable, and that comes from a stronger place for me.
There's also quite a lot of verbal wordplay, though, in what you do. You see on the walls here a number of your early limericks and so on. You seem to like wordplay a lot.
Well, you know, my early, you know, Dr. Seuss was an early strong influence, and there's something about the rhythmic nature of his words, and it kind of, again, not talking a lot, for me, it was a way of, you know, kind of communicating simply, and, you know, so he was quite a strong influence on me.
Now, the visual style is rightly famous, but I find, looking around here, it's your observation of people and places is just as much what drives the ideas and humour. Johnny Depp, I believe, has said that you can capture the entire essence of a character in one quick pen sketch and suddenly open out for actors, what it's all about. Where did that sort of observation and free play of imagination come from?
Well, I guess it was sort of feeling outside of society. You kind of, you're not feeling in there, you're kind of looking at things. So I always felt much more, I'd sit in like shopping malls and do sketches and things, or just drawings and look at people. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the feeling of not, feeling a part of society. So you feel much more observational towards things. So I don't know, perhaps that's sort of where it kind of comes from.
You've worked with an extraordinary group of close and very long-standing collaborators, among them obviously the greats like Johnny Depp, composer Danny Elfman, costume designer Colleen Atwood, and of course Helena Bonham Carter. What is it about those groups that sort of seem to knit together so successfully and help realise your vision?
Well, I like working with people. It's fun to work with people that you've worked with before, because you bounce, it's a collaborative process for them, so obviously, you get things from other people. I like working with actors and seeing, for instance, with John, to see him play different characters and do different things. And, it's nice to work with new people and mix it up, but there is something sort of fascinating about seeing somebody transform each time into something different. And, that's something I learned early on. After being kind of a loner making films, you become like this weird family, and you know, part of the joy of making a film is working with other artists and bouncing off of each other that way, and learning from them and gaining from them, and that's the fun of the filmmaking process.
You said yesterday though you still see the characters and you pick the right actor for the character rather than starting from the actors, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's you can always be surprised by anything. There may be an actor that you don't particularly like or feel this way, but for the right character, they can sort of blow your mind and all of a sudden be your favorite actor. So I always like to try to keep open to that experience and coming from a character and never do anything whether I think this is going to be successful or that actor. You try to start it from the sort of seed of it, whatever the project is, and then go from there.
Okay, you've had quite a remarkable career. The cult successes like Beetlejuice to the amazing success of Alice in Wonderland, it's about the fifth highest grossing of all time. You must now be coming conscious of the pressure to deliver really quite huge box office. Does it sort of affect that very individualistic vision you've always had in your films?
No, because it's always a struggle to make a film. I realized early on, when you make a successful film, you think, then you have the opportunity to do whatever you want to do. And I remember after doing Batman, I thought, well, that was a success. But then after that, trying to get Edward Scissorhands done was very difficult. Nobody wanted to do that, and nobody wanted to do Ed Wood. I have that even now. So it's a process that. Always kind of keeps you slightly humble. It's never kind of a blank check and never an open book that way. It's always a struggle to get a film made, but that's what also makes it feel like you achieve something, is to go through that kind of trauma.
Okay. So finally, what's next? We know you're working on Frank and Weenie, and there's some of the early models in there, and I gather there might be a feature film version of the television series Dark Shadows. After the Burton Down Under film, what's after that?
There's this horrifying trend in Hollywood where they have a release date before you have a script, and I'm trying to get, I've done that, been there before, and I'm not going to do that again. So I really don't have a project next until whatever the next, I get a good script on something, and then you go for it. Because you spend so long on something, a couple of years, you want to make sure you feel passionate about it. So, I'm still recovering from the Cannes Film Festival and this. So, I'm just focusing on this, which is really exciting.
You had a good time at Cannes, looking at catching up on films.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to see what's going on in the world. It was exciting. And this, my focus has been on this.
And I think you created this is where I'd like to. A surprise again for us, Tim, in the film you picked as the winner there. It was a very individual film.
Cannes funny, but I enjoy it because, you know, this world is so fast-paced and rapid and fire and, you know, so quick. It was a very sort of contemplative, quiet film, which, you know, I thought was just a nice antidote to everything else that's happening in the world. Mm.
Well, we're looking forward, after you've got your energies back, for the next film, whatever it is, you know, it's going to be fantastic. Thanks for coming to Melbourne. We hope it's the first of many visits. And there is a very special friendship for you down
well,
there.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.